This Tuesday, November 1st, will have different connotations for different people. Some will simply look at it as being the second day of a work week they would like to be over. Others will see it as marking the seven-day countdown to the general election. Our friends in Chicago will be hoping that it will be the day of the sixth game of the World Series, while our friends in Cleveland will be hoping that they're preparing for a victory parade. And what about us in the church? Well, we will look at Tuesday, November 1st, and we will see that it is All Saints' Day. The moment in the liturgical year when we remember the faithful men and women who have come before us, who in their different ways sought to follow the path of Jesus Christ, whether they are famous and remembered by name or their identities have been lost to history. They are the pioneers of the faith who blazed a trail for you and for me. Now, All Saints' Day doesn't receive that much attention in our society today. It's been overshadowed by All Hallows' Eve, which first began to gain some traction in the Middle Ages as people began to worry about restless spirits, and has been transmogrified into our modern American Halloween. Our annual bacchanalia of trick-or-treating and costume wearing will draw the participation, according to the National Retail Federation, of 171 million Americans who will spend $8.4 billion, $82.93 a person, to have some fun. My friends, that is a lot of candy corn. Now, it's all well and good, and people will enjoy themselves, and I don't want to be a party pooper and rain on anybody's parade. But we in the church know that we should focus our attention on what is important. And so today, we are marking All Saints' Day. Now, for those who are sticklers for the liturgical calendar, there may be a thought that today's supposed to be the 24th Sunday in Pentecost. All Saints' Day doesn't come until Tuesday. That's the future. How are we going to deal with that? Well, it's easy. We are going to engage in some time travel. We don't need a machine. We don't need a contraption. But we are going into the future right now, by marking All Saints' Day. Now, the moment I uttered the words time travel, or perhaps when you looked at the bulletin and saw the title for today's sermon, you may have thought, oh dear God, the preacher is going to geek out on us today. I ask you to bear with me. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to attend the launch conference for the Institute for Cross-Disciplinary Engagement at Dartmouth. It was 2 days of stimulating, fascinating presentations and panels, exploring everything from the nature of free will to the multiverse to the possibility of other life out there. This institute, which is being led by Professor Marcelo Gleiser of the Physics Department, seeks to bring together the humanities and the sciences in dialogue and conversation, to overcome the barriers that have grown up in academia so people can bring together different perspectives to think about and address the big questions of life. I felt so fortunate to be there. It was like being back in college, hearing all of these really smart people share amazing ideas, and I knew I wasn't going to have to sit for an exam. I was inspired. And so I thought perhaps I should take the opportunity to do some reading outside of my normal areas of interest. I just happened to have read a book review in the New York Times and also in the Wall Street Journal of James Gleick's Time Travel. The reviews were really positive, so I picked up this book. It's good. I recommend it to you. Here's what the dust flap says. Here is a mind-bending exploration of time travel, its subversive origins, its evolution in literature and science, and its influence on our understanding of time itself. Now, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. If you don't want to hear this, cover your ears. Time travel is not possible. I'm sorry. There's the problem of the nature of the universe, at least as we understand it, that makes going back in time impossible. Now, there are ways to fudge things and perhaps travel into the future. And that involves finding a spacecraft that will be traveling close to the speed of light. And then coming back here at some point after you're done with your trip, you're going to find out that since you've been traveling close to the speed of light, time has been unfolding differently than it has for everybody back here. We can thank relativity for this. But that seems like a fudge, a cheat. And you're not going to be able to come back and tell any of us what you've seen. You'll be stuck there. So, why bother thinking about any of this? Why explore this concept? Well, in doing so, we can gain a deeper understanding of how the universe functions, how the laws of physics operate, what they might be, and we can also gain new perspective on how we experience time and life and the universe around us. Now, when I was growing up, I didn't get to watch much television. But I do fondly remember being able to turn on Channel 11, WPIX in New York, to watch reruns of the original Star Trek on Saturday evening. And my favorite episodes were the ones where the crew went back in time. And I had to deal with all those questions and challenges and paradoxes about changing history and whether they had the ability to do any of that. This plot line was popular enough that it continued to be resurrected in the future iterations of the program, and it has appeared throughout popular culture. One other show that I got to see on occasion and really couldn't appreciate until I was grown up were The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm sorry, but a 7-year-old kid is not going to get the joke about Norman Mailer at the student union. Included in the program were the exploits of Mr. Peabody and his boy Sherman, who would travel back in history in the Wayback Machine. Clever people figured that this whole concept could be mined for laughs. But it could also be used to set us on edge. Some of you may remember The Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the killer cyborg from the future who travels back into the past to kill Sarah Connor before she gives birth to the son who will ultimately defeat the rise of the machines. Now, when I hear those words come out of my mouth, I think, my God, that sounds ridiculous. But you start thinking about the plot, and it gives you an opportunity to reflect on cause and effect and contingency and agency. And we do get that great line, "I'll be back." In a more lighthearted fashion, there were the Back to the Future movies. You remember Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd as Marty McFly and Doc, traveling through time in the souped-up DeLorean. But the most profound movie involving time travel is the one that involves no contraptions, no machines, but simply a man who is destined to wake up and relive the same day over and over again. At first, he doesn't know what's going on. And then he realizes how he's been trapped. He tries to kill himself. He wakes up again. Again, he tries suicide. Wakes up again. And he realizes he is in an existential hell, and we know it too. Because each morning, poor Bill Murray is awakened by Sonny and Cher singing, "I've Got You, Babe." Finally, Bill Murray's snarky, snide weatherman figures out that he has an opportunity to set things right in his life. And he sheds his cynicism and his cruelty and his selfishness, and ultimately he breaks free of this prison. It's a surprisingly profound movie. And it reminds us that we can see things in new and different ways. Now, Mr. Blake makes the contention that our current understanding of the future, how we envision a tomorrow, is a relatively new way of thinking in human history. With technological and social changes in the late 19th century, people began to see things changing. And in that context, H.G. Wells published his book, The Time Machine. Now, the story, which is still in print and has been made into movies, was really a commentary on Wells' society. But it offered a vision of a future, one not rooted in a fantasy, nor religious in nature, of an eschatological nature, but instead an imagination of how that Victorian England might evolve. And he goes into the far distant future. And that was a new way of thinking of things. And just as people were beginning to think about the future in different ways, they were also looking at the past in new ways, as modern archaeology emerged. And people began to literally unearth the past. Now, this didn't all happen overnight. There were rumblings and shifts and murmurs of new ways of thinking emerging hundreds of years before, but it really gained steam and crystallized at the turn of the 20th century. For the first time, people were talking about what might happen 100 years hence, and everybody was excited about the 20th century. And at the same time, there was a mania for remembering the past. The centennial of this country's founding was a new thing, a celebration, an innovation. People were relating to and understanding time in different ways. And in a sense, though there were no machines, people were engaging in time travel. They were trying to envision the future, and they were trying to access the past, to be present in places other than the moment they inhabited. Now, I don't know whether I would want to go back to the past. It would be interesting to look around. But what if I don't get to take my glasses? I'm not going to be able to see very well. And I won't have my allergy medication, so I'll sneeze a lot. And there'll be disease. I can think of all the things that could go wrong, but of course I could also think of the people I might meet, the experiences I would have. And as to the future, I'm old enough to know I'll probably be disappointed. I was a kid, I thought we were going to get flying cars. Instead, I had a Subaru with 200,000 miles on it. So I've got this moment. But there are different ways for us to look at the moment, and that's where time travel comes into play. And in the church, think about the church. How do we define it? Well, one could turn to our bylaws and read about covenant members, those who've stood up in front of the congregation and said certain words and said, that's the church. Well, one could argue for a broader view and say the church isn't just those people who stand up in front and become covenant members, but it's all those who come and worship with us, whether they do it week in and week out, or they do it occasionally, but anybody who is engaged in our common life. And maybe it's not just this collection of Christians. Maybe it also includes our friends at the West Lebanon Congregational Church, our neighbors at the Lebanon United Methodist Church, people we know over at the Church of Christ at Dartmouth College in Hanover. Friends and family who are worshiping in congregations across this nation and indeed perhaps in other parts of the world this day. It's this big horizontal vision of the church. But that's all extent in the here and now. How about we also look at it vertically? You've heard phrases like the communion of saints, a cloud of witnesses. That is the church throughout the ages. That is the church that is comprised of the women and men who walked before us. This sanctuary has been here for almost 200 years. And there was a time when there was a Sunday where these pews were filled with worshipers, and not a single individual here today had been born. That was the first Congregational Church of Lebanon. And barring the return of Jesus, or some horrible mismanagement of our resources on our part, 100 years hence, there will be people here worshiping, and they too will be the first Congregational Church of Lebanon. That's time travel. We can see ourselves on a horizontal axis and on a vertical one. That makes a cross. And we know there is where we find the love and grace of God in Jesus Christ, which is not bound by the laws of physics. There are no constraints there. God doesn't have to worry about the space-time continuum, quantum mechanics. One of the things I really appreciate about what Professor Gleiser is trying to do at ICE is that he wants people to respect one another and listen to one another. Even if they come from different perspectives. We in the church have struggled with science over these recent centuries. And when it has challenged some of our precious preconceptions, some have sought to flee and hide. Others to roll over and surrender. God has given us the ability to carry multiple ideas in our heads and in our hearts and in our souls. My hope on this All Saints Day is that we give God thanks for our intellects and our ability to conceive of ideas like time travel, to see God's creation in new and amazing and wondrous ways. And that trying to envision a future or to understand the past and pull it together, we are able to move beyond the isolation of the present moment, but to claim the goodness, the holiness, the grace of our place in the communion of saints and the great cloud of witnesses.